This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hi, I'm Susan Earhart in Fredericton, New Brunswick. Welcome to the Maritimes This Week. This is a podcast featuring some of the best CBC Radio 1 programming from Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and New Brunswick. This week, cleaning up after the big storm in Nova Scotia, heading back to school at Acadia, keeping moose off the road in New Brunswick, and downsizing the Catholic Church in PEI. That's the sound of what was left of Hurricane Noel when it blew into the Maritimes last week. Trees were knocked down, roads were washed out, and thousands of homes were without power. Nova Scotia was the hardest hit. Here are some of the stories collected by CBC reporters there.
What's your name?
My name's Tommy Harper.
And what are we doing here?
Just revisiting my boat. I've been checking my boat every couple hours all evening just to make sure, along with several other members of the club often do this.
All right, let's go check out your boat.
Sure. Well, that's a good sign. She's still there.
Bob Thompson from Eastern Passage.
So maybe you could describe the scene around you here.
You don't really see this much sea in this area. I'm traveling 15 feet high anyway.
And the causeway is closed off, I see.
Yes, I understand they just paved this last week. So they're going to have to do it all over again now.
Oh, no, you're kidding.
Yeah, that's true.
And there are boulders just all over the road here.
Oh, yeah, some of the boulders, I suppose, would weigh like 2,000, 3,000 pounds.
What's your name?
Crystal Dort.
When you woke up this morning and you came down here, like when you first saw it, what went through your head?
It was just incredible because this is a beach where we come swimming every summer. And it's amazing that there's no beach now.
And the road here, too.
That's amazing. We probably won't have any swimming this year at this beach. It looks like an earthquake.
Curtis Ashley, Maple Ridge Trailer Park.
So tell me what we're looking at over here.
Some wind damage that happened here about 2:30 this morning. Just left go. Started coming off.
What part of the house started coming off?
Right here in the corner here. It's the bottom part of the side.
Where were you when this was happening?
Standing right here in my window looking out. Wind blew it all off.
Yeah. My name is Sean Sturge, and we're at the corner of Jubilee and Prior Street in front of our house.
What are we seeing here?
Part of this tree over here to the right came down and crashed right down through our front porch and also took out our chimney on top of the house. So we're once again, because we got hit hard in one as well, so we've got a another messy day of cleanup, but everybody's okay, and our kids slept through it, so all in all, not a bad night.
What's your name?
Mike Hennessy. Last night, about 4:30, that branch fell off and took our power mast off the house. It sounded like something fell by the bedside table, but it was just the wire being pulled off the house. So.
Were you living on this street during Hurricane Juan? Yeah.
We were. Same thing happened from the same tree that should have been cut down by the city or the power corp. I don't know who's responsible, but I knew it was going to happen because the branch was over the wire and it should have been cut last time. So, anyhow.
Hi, what's your name?
Matt LeDuc.
Matt, I see you're decked out in a wetsuit and standing on the beach. What are you contemplating?
I was just coming down to see if the waves were any good, but because I looked out online, they're supposed to be pretty big because of the hurricane that came, but everything seems to be closing out, so there's not really much surf here today. It's all just breaking out once, so you can't really surf it at all.
There is a kayaker over there, though. Did you see that?
Yeah, I just saw that just now when you pointed out. Yeah, it's. I haven't done that, but I'm sure it'd be pretty fun.
Have you checked out any other beaches today?
No, that's what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to go check Cow Bay and a couple of other places, see if there's anything that's surfable today. Pretty exciting.
Michael Roberge, Stephen Puddicombe, Mary Ito, and Nina Corfu were some of the reporters who braved the storm for those interviews. Two students from Turkey were particularly impressed with the weather. Jem Jinar and Izji Tikin decided to check out the storm at Peggy's Cove. They spoke to the CBC's Jean Laroche.
I was just so excited that it's storm, it's first time I'm seeing it. We decided to go to Peggy's Cove, watch the ocean. And you know Peggy's Cove, that big parking spot and long distance to ocean. Just a big wave came from ocean and it came until middle of the parking place. When we were going back, when we were close to ocean, just like big wave came and my car was underwater.
Landed on top of the car basically, you know. We were kind of scared, so yeah. We were pretty much the only ones, you know, like on the road. So we thought, you know, like if anything would happen, nobody would be able to actually come and find us over there. So
we are happy we are here alive.
Yeah. Now, they warn you to stay away. Did you not hear those warnings?
No, I don't listen to radio. I don't watch television.
Actually, what happened was they told us that it would be pretty much on the maximum around 2 a.m. So we waited at home and there was like nothing really going on. So we said, okay, why don't we go around and like check what's going on and stuff. And we went out and people were actually saying, you know what, they just made a new announcement and it's supposed to be right now at around 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. So we are like, why don't we just try Peggy's Cove and see how it is over there. So
was it scary?
It was kind of. We couldn't even stay for 5 minutes. We just saw the wave and then we said, okay, it's better, it's time to go. Basically, so
like I only saw in movies those kinds of waves. In reality, it's scary.
Jem Jinar and Izji Tikin, two Turkish students at Dalhousie University. The storm hit parts of New Brunswick as well, but it couldn't slow down marathon runners in Moncton. CBC Radio's Melissa Friedman spoke with some of the 900 runners making their way to the start line of the Legs for Literacy Marathon.
So the Intrepid Early Start Marathoners left at 7 o'clock and the larger group at 8 o'clock. Everything is running on time.
My name is Jody and I'm from St. John. Second half marathon in Moncton for Legs for Literacy. So it doesn't matter what the weather is, you just do it.
Really? Were there any thoughts that...
A runner doesn't have those thoughts.
There were no thoughts of not coming?
No.
And you seem well equipped, though, for the weather. Can you tell me what...
Bag outfit to keep me dry, but I think it's drying up.
Yeah, it looks to be drying up. It's still very windy, though. How do you think that's going to affect your running?
Well, it doesn't really matter. It's, for me, it's not time, it's completion, so that's okay.
And what about you? Can I get your name and where you're from?
Yeah, I'm Heather Elder. I'm from Quispamsis.
I guess, what do you think of running in this weather?
I think it's going to be quite a challenge, but it is a good cause, so I'm willing to go out and face the weather.
How have you, adjusted the way you'll do things today?
Well, I know that I won't obviously make a time, but like Jody said, it's not about time, it's about finishing, so, and it is a good cause, so I'll go out there and try my best.
Have you ever run in weather like this before?
Not like this, no. I've run in rain and in the snow and stuff, but not in high winds like this, so it should be interesting.
And were there any thoughts of not showing up for this?
Oh, yes. There was like, even now, but no, it's a good cause, so I'll go out there today.
We'll be starting the half marathon in 20 minutes, so we would encourage you to get out to the start line at least 5 minutes before the actual start.
Jacques Pichette from Edmonton. Well, it's the first time I'm going to run in rain, so we're going to give it a try, and then I'll be able to let you know how I felt for the first time. So there's a lot of wind from what I'm hearing. So we're going to, I think the wind will be more of a challenge than the rain.
And so how have you had to, I guess, adjust your thinking for this race given the weather?
Well, we have to motivate ourselves a little more, not get discouraged with the wind, and give our best.
And was there any thought of perhaps not showing up for this given the weather?
After a new drive on the new Trans-Canada Highway, we're going to run in any weather.
Make sure you're dressed warm. Make sure you're safe. Enjoy the day.
Kelly Gunn, I'm from Grand Barachois.
Okay, and what are you going to be running today?
I'm running the half marathon, I hope, weather permitting.
Well, yeah, what do you think of the weather?
It's pretty windy, and so I'm hoping that all the runners are going out here just thinking it's not going to be a personal best, it's going to be a fun run.
And have you ever run in anything like this before?
Well, I've run five marathons, but I haven't run in weather like this, no. I'm just watching myself in this run. I'm keeping it easy and just going to watch my pace.
Well, what made you still decide to come take part?
Because I'm registered. And I don't know, I'm just one of those ones that it's an addictive sport. So here we are.
There was a calm after a different kind of storm at Acadia University this week. A three-week strike by faculty ended, and students went back to class. Student Sarah Mayberry, Krista Esterbooks, and Student Union President Kyle Spiel spoke to the CBC's Don Connolly.
Let's talk a little bit with you first, Sarah. We just heard the outline of the proposals from the university. Do the four provisions suit you? Does it seem to be a good way to go?
Yes, I think so. I think it's a good way to start us back into everything.
Did you stay in Wolfville for the entire duration?
I did. We were here for volleyball, so we didn't really have a choice about leaving.
Did you do much work?
We had a study hall for 2 hours about three times a week, so we got some work done then. But other than that, not too much.
Do you feel like this term has not necessarily been wasted, but do you feel that you've got a lot less bang for your buck than you might have expected?
Well, definitely. I think after missing 16 days of classes, there's a couple of classes that I really am concerned about, the things that I miss, because they're really important to things that I want to do in the future. But other than that, I think that we'll be okay.
Christy, the same kinds of questions to you. Are you happy with the provisions as they've been outlined and as Jack just told us about them?
Mine are a little different, being in the education program. I start my practice teaching in a week and a half, so I have about a week of classes left, and I feel a little scattered right now. Lots of major projects to get finished up, but hopefully it'll work out.
Did you get much work done during the interruption?
Yes and no. I have a lot of major projects, and I would have liked to have been in contact with my professors to know exactly if I'm on the right track. So some classes, yes, some classes, not so much.
Kyle, you were keeping your powder dry during the course of the dispute between the faculty, staff, and the administration. Are you in a position now to take an advocacy position on some of the issues which have been resolved, i.e. a refund, the possibility of, you know, some of the other things which seem to be on the table for at least discussion, if not negotiation?
We definitely are. We're going to be in talks with the university administration in probably the next week or two, trying to see what kind of money is left for a refund to students and their tuition next semester. We also were in a bit of a position. We had a little bit of a conflict with potential school on Remembrance Day, the long weekend this coming week. So we're definitely in a position to change that as well. So we're definitely in a position right now to represent the students and make sure that all sides still are concerned with what the student opinion is.
I see that the university is going to attempt to see if they can contact like WestJet and Air Canada to see if they might not have some flexibility in terms of booking flights for the Christmas break coming and going.
Yeah, that's actually something I've been doing the last couple of days, is trying to see. I've been contacting Scott Bryson and I'm trying to see what he can do up in Ottawa there. I'm trying to get some stories from some international students who may have booked their flights already, spent a couple of $1,000 on their flights to get the change in flight fee waived, or to cancel flight fee waived, just to make it a little more convenient for them.
Probably more realistic, if it's realistic at all, probably more realistic to expect a discount in the next term than it is to expect a check in the mail from Acadia this term, right?
That's right, yeah. There will be some kind of reimbursement for next semester's tuition.
Acadia University students Kyle Spiel, Sarah Mayberry, and Krista Esterbrooks talking about the end of the three-week strike by faculty. Highway 7 runs between Fredericton and St. John, and it's been the scene of many moose car collisions. The province wants to put up fencing along the road, but the land belongs to a federal military base. The province held an open house in Wellsford, about halfway between Fredericton and St. John. The CBC's Sarah Trainer was there.
I'm Alden Brewster, and I'm from Station Road here in Wellsford.
Okay, so what brought you out here tonight?
I'll just come up to see what they were doing, make sure everything's going to be okay. Yeah, I had a look at the maps, and they're covering part of it, but they shouldn't be doing it all. When the roads go in, they should build them things and be done with it.
I know that they are getting started with 3.5 kilometers on both sides of fencing. What do you think?
Well, that's not bad, Connor. That'll take and cover the area where my niece get hit by the moose up there to top off her car. And that's a start.
Was she okay?
Yeah, she was lucky. She must have ducked, Connor. took the top right off the car. She should have really been dead, but she never got a scratch out of it.
So you have quite a connection to the need for some fencing on this road then?
Yeah, the same night Denise got hit, we got hit too. Jumped right over the front of us and took the front right off our vehicle.
A moose?
Yep.
How much of a difference do you think this will make to have some fencing up?
Well, it'll keep them off the highway anyway. Yeah, we just watch. Keep a close eye. You got to watch and just pray that you don't get it. That's all you can do.
Okay, I'm Kathy McCullum. I am the mother of a daughter that was involved into an accident one night back in June. Her and two other soldiers hit a moose. They're lucky to be alive. And I've been fighting for fencing since that. The biggest thing right now is it's psychological. When she drives by that area, because she has to drive by that area because she is in the military, I think it brings back a lot of memories of that night. This meeting, we talk about it all the time because this is my fight. And she had made a comment the other night. She said, "Do you think that you will ever stop?" She said, "You remind me about it all the time."
Well, you've already taken a peek at the map, and I've heard you asking some questions. So what is your reaction to what you're seeing?
I see the promise that was given me from Minister Landry, supposed to start at Queensbrook, to where Carrie's accident was, the first 3.5. And then it shows the 26 kilometers for the environment assessment that will be completed whenever Minister Landry goes back into the house for the rest of the money. That's the next biggest thing to make.
Are there lingering concerns for you?
Yeah. Number one concern is the money for the rest of the project. Number two, I do have the letter from Minister Gordon O'Connor guaranteeing success of the fence, but the reason why I'm here tonight is because it is a requirement for the environment assessment to be completed. I don't know how much longer it's going to take to be completed because there's no fence until this environment assessment is completed.
Bernie McIntyre, and I'm from the village of Wellsford. I was just seeing how far they're going to go and to see if it's going to be any good for right now, but what I'm seeing right now is I have a few questions about it. So.
Well, what is your first impression?
Where the first going to start? They're right there on the highway. There's going to be a dip on the road with a turn, and it's going to be not a very good place to really start a fence as you come around a corner or in a dip down a road. And then right at the end of the fence, that's where the moose are going to be coming out crossing the road. My concern is if they only do a little bit of it right now, they're just going to have the moose go to another area. It's only going to be a two-mile fence right at the beginning. I'd like to see them do the whole thing if they're going to do it all instead of just doing that little bit. They're just going to bring the moose to that area where the fence ends and where the fence starts. So, really, if they did it all the way, yes, it would be a lot better.
Had you ever had a...
Yes, close encounters with moose, yes. Quite a few, actually. Well, there is a lot of moose in here. It is a good idea to get it done. I agree with them.
But, now, what is your impression of timelines and what are you hearing
really
there?
No, they haven't really said they're going to do just this 3.5 kilometers first. And then they have to wait for a budget and environmental assessment for the rest of it. So they really should get that first before they start doing anything, in my opinion.
Some people at a public meeting about moose fencing at New Brunswick's Highway 7. And finally, at 85 years old, Father Francis Corcoran is ready to retire. In fact, he's been ready to retire for years now, but his parish in Eastern PEI needs him. For the past 24 years, he's been serving in St. Peter's Parish. The Diocese of Charlottetown is looking at reducing the number of Catholic parishes on Prince Edward Island by 2/3, and closing a number of island churches. Aaron Moore spoke to Father Corcoran about the challenges facing the church.
Well, it's been coming for a long time, and of course we've been studying this since officially since 1994, because we don't have the personnel, for one thing. You see, I'm almost 86 years old, and as I say, it's me or nobody. There's no replacement. That means that, I've got to do the best that I can, and other priests have had to do 3 or 4 parishes, and that makes it hard even if you're younger. Like Father Brendan in Georgetown has four parishes, and my nephew Father Jay up in East, up in South Rustico has four parishes, and I don't know how many Paul Batchelor has in Alberton. He's got four or five, and that's one thing.
What about declining congregations? Is that something that you're seeing as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there are fewer and fewer people coming to church, and people travel, you know. They make up their mind where they're going to go to Mass on Sunday. They may go to the Basilica, or they may go to Surrey, or they may go to St. Charles or Morel or any place at all, whatever is convenient, because there's a lot of hockey in on the weekends, and basketball, and volleyball, and so people catch Mass wherever they can, and that's not a good thing for parish unity. It's very hard to arrange for catechetical classes, for instance.
And in the proposal, what is it saying, what would it mean for the future of your church here?
In this area, well, it's proposed to be one parish. That would be Surrey and Rolla Bay and East Point and St. Margaret's and St. Charles and St. Peter's and Little Pond. That's what, seven or eight. And they would be amalgamated into one parish with, I would propose, two churches.
Obviously for some people, if theirs is the church that will be closing,
yeah.
They'll probably, even if they understand why, be quite upset about that.
Oh, yes. It's pretty hard, you know, and it's not something new because it's happening all over. But here on the island, there's one thing. Everything was set up in horse and buggy days. And people traveled, 5 miles was a decent limit to have to go to Mass, summer and winter, not the horse and buggy or a horse and sleigh. But in the present time, you know, people go all kinds of places. People are going to have to make the adjustments. It's not going to be easy, because people were born, baptized, and married in different churches, and their kids went there, and they look upon it as their church, and you can't blame them.
That was Father Francis Corcoran. He's the priest at St. Peter's Parish. He was speaking with Aaron Moore. Thanks for listening to the Maritimes This Week, featuring the best of CBC radio programming from the East Coast. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard on the podcast, feel free to contact us at cbc.ca/podcasting. All CBC podcasts are available by going to cbc.ca and following the podcast links, or go to iTunes for download. I'm Susan Earhart in Fredericton.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.